Hello, everyone. This is Classic of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. In honor of Veterans Day, as a network, we would like to encourage all of our listeners and followers to donate to the Wounded Warrior Project. The Wounded Warrior Project is a program set up to honor and empower wounded warriors. Their purpose is to raise awareness and enlist the public's aid for the needs of injured service members, help injured service members aid and assist each other, and provide unique direct programs and services to meet the needs of injured service members. In order to make your donation to the Wounded Warrior Project, visit their website at woundedwarriorproject.org. Again, that's woundedwarriorproject.org. In addition, if you are in the Baltimore, Maryland, or DC area, you can check out our very own Sarome Russell from the Decepticomics and co-host of the Bad Advice Show. He'll be performing on Veterans Day, November 11th, at the Myth and Moonshine Bar in Baltimore. Show begins at 8:30 and is free, being done in support of Wounded Warrior. So you can show up, make a donation, and support your veterans, and support Sarome. So you can check us out at coldslitherpodcast.com for more details about the show. And again, you can donate to the Wounded Warrior Project at www.woundedwarriorproject.org. The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim Deal Double G. And we have the whole crew here tonight. The four horsemen of the Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G, like I just said, and I'm joined by @agent_70 on Twitter.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Also have @PCN_dirt on Twitter. He of the PopCultureNetwork.com website. Make sure to go check that out. And we have @RoddyCat here with us also.
Yeah!
Yes! Yeah. We got the band back together again.
He's back.
The man.
It's time for the inversion.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. Have some gripes with that.
Yep.
He, the man with the news.
Desire.
So, want to remind everyone to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account @theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Search for The Click Nation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/theclicknation. Use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite social media websites. Remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Yep.
And we are a part of the Cold Slither Podcasting Network. Where you can go to coldslitherpodcast.com and find our show and the many more podcasts on the CSP. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. All right. So let's start with the cinematic / television / media news of the week. Casting for CBS's Supergirl reveals lead roles. As I try to click to see who are actually, I guess, rumored for these roles. And as I wait for that to open...
I love it.
So Ant-Man, Haley Atwell's role confirmed by casting notice.
Look at that. Synergy.
So possibly a flashback scene with her and Hank Pym, played by... Who is playing Hank Pym? Kurt Russell?
Kirk Douglas.
Yeah. Douglas, one of those Kirks.
Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas. Kirk Douglas.
Kirk Douglas and Kirk Russell. That's a movie.
So, back to Supergirl. In an exclusive with TV Line, it was revealed that casting has begun for the upcoming Supergirl television series set to air on CBS. Currently, the show is looking for two leads for the series. Duh. The first role is Kara Zor-El, a.k.a. Kara Danvers. What? Kara Danvers, Supergirl? Is that her name? She's Danvers?
That's what I thought, too. I'm like, I don't... That, okay.
I'm not even trusting this comic Vine article anymore.
Isn't that one of Kara's secret identities? No?
Maybe.
I could be wrong.
She was Linda Danvers, and they called her Kara Kent,
right?
When she was with the Kent for a while, but I'm not aware of her ever being called Kara Danvers.
Really, DC? Really?
And our other role is for 26-year-old Alexandra Danvers, Kara's intelligent science-focused foster sister. Okay, so Danvers, I guess, is correct. All right, so that's probably way down the line if that show actually gets made. We'll keep posted. So Spider-Man's animated series cast to reunite for a new project. I believe they even have a podcast out now. I saw that today or yesterday.
They do?
Yep.
No kidding.
So yeah, they kicked off, the head writer kicked off a 20th anniversary celebration at the, I believe it was at the Stan Lee Comic-Kazi,
yeah.
Comic convention. Brian Bendis is to appear on Late Night with Seth Meyers, more than likely to promote Powers.
Now granted, it's a little early because it won't be until January. So I'm not sure why they announced it now. Yeah.
3 month lead, solicitations. Robert Kirkman's Outcast gets its lead. I guess I can click and see who that is.
Patrick Fidget, something like that.
Okay, thank you. Marvel reveals Agent Carter premiere, Agent Shield's return dates. I think that's a little ways to go before we even get to that, right?
January, I believe.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, Agent Carter will debut January 6th at 9 p.m., filling Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s time slot during its mid-season break. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will return with all new episodes on March 3rd to its 9 p.m. time slot. And Agent Carter is only 8 episodes long, I believe.
Right.
New Agent Carter character connect series to Iron Man 2, and that is Whiplash's father...
Anton Venko.
Yeah, Anton Venko. All right, close that. So now to the comic book news.
Yay!
Boom Studios is celebrating 10 years in style. So they've
been
around
10
years.
Have they really been around for 10 years? Dang, good for them, man.
That does deserve an applause. I can see myself working at Boom Studios. Kind of like them as a company.
just putting that out there.
There you go. Do you hear us? Do you hear us?
I've given it thought. They're an indie, not promotion, but a publisher. They've got.
He's in wrestling.
They put out a lot of good comics that I enjoy. So yeah. So watch out, future. Jack Kirby is now getting credit in Marvel titles. So
long overdue.
See his name popping up in books. Thrill Bent teams with IDW for print collections.
Yeah, so Thorburn kind of went all in on digital. No, that's Mark Wade's company. They kind of went in all in on digital, and he's been kind of evangelizing it every now and then. And I guess they decided just, you know, hey, some people still like print. I'm not sure, but there you go.
Well, he's always said that he still likes print. Like, he right. owns, or well, he's part owner, I guess, of a print comic shop, but he wanted right. to right. see how long he could push the digital thing as well, because he thinks that's the future. And the thing is, I read probably 80% of my comics digitally, and mm-hmm. I don't like the way Thrillbent does their digital comics, because they do it in the Marvel Infinity or Marvel Infinite style, or the DC Squared style, however, which way you want to look at it, but it's mm-hmm. always that type of thing where you tap the panel and something in the panel moves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you tap the panel and a character turns around, you tap the panel and it switches the focus to something else.
Right, I just, almost motion picture type stuff, motion right, comic book stuff.
Well, it's like that terrible Fantastic Four animated series from the 60s.
Ah!
Is what I always think of. And I much prefer just having a comic book page on my tablet screen or on my monitor. I'm fine with that. You know, trying to make it these interactive things, to me, just makes it something else. And that's so. They've started to move. They moved to Dynamite and did a couple books in print, just as like standalone issues or, you know, whatever. But they're going to IDW for actual like book collections, putting them on the shelves of Barnes & Noble and stuff like that.
Okay. DC announces Convergence, a 9-week event that will interrupt all the series being published as DC makes their big move from New York to California. And so this is for April and May. And let's see. So it'll launch April 1st with a zero issue that spins out the finales of Earth 2, Worlds End, and the New 52 Futures End, leading to an 8-part main series and 42-part miniseries that examine the worlds from the past 8 decades, jeez, of the DC Universe and the heroes and villains they contain. According to co-publisher Jim Lee, the event will tackle the most asked questions since DC rebooted its superhero line in 2011 and with New 52. Whether key stories in DC history still, quote-unquote, count in continuity, and what happened to some of the beloved characters that haven't been reintroduced in the past 3 years. The miniseries will also introduce a new villain, Telos, who is born of Brainiac in this mysterious planet. Although Convergence will involve an array of creators who will be announced in the coming weeks, the main plot line handled by veteran television writer Jeff King from White Collar and Continuum, making his comic book debut. Dan Jurgens will co-write the zero issue with them, while Scott Liddell will help to lay out the overall outline. Thoughts?
Well, you know they had to do something because they are moving cross-country, so it's not like, you know, this is just another random gimmick that they're doing to have a gimmick month, you know? Like, this is something that had to be done because most people are not going to be available for a month. So it's at least, you know, a better situation than just pulling out a bunch of random one-and-done stories out of nowhere and doing a month of books that don't mean anything.
Right. So this would be a nice two-month break where I can not read DC books.
Lord.
It's another villain month.
That's funny.
It'll be 2 months of them. 2 months. And the only reason I say that is because I am not as knowledgeable on DC's, what they say, 88 decades worth of continuity.
Goodness.
Unless there's a couple of issues that have some really good artwork, I'll be checking out. But, yeah. Huh. I'm sure people will be saying the same thing once Marvel starts their Secret Wars. Oh, and speaking, since we're talking about editors being away, I'm not sure if this is in the news or not, but Ellie Pyle announced on Twitter that she's leaving Marvel to join DC's Vertigo.
No, it's not in there. I didn't have a chance to put it in there.
Today. Yeah.
Yeah. So, congrats to her. She will be missed in the Spider-Man line of books that she edits. And supposedly she said the book, you know, the her duties will be picked up by Nick Lowe and Sanaa Aminat and Devin Lewis, I believe.
So good hands.
Yep. What did I leave off? Where am I? Okay, so...
You're right in the middle. Yeah, line 97, 98.
DC Chronicles History of Batsuit for 75 years. 75 Batman video. Blackjack returns after almost 20 years from Dover Publications. I have no idea who that is.
I recall that, sort of, 20 years ago. There's something called Blackjack on the newsstand, on the comic book rack. But beyond that... I'm not sure why they think it's going to make a big comeback now.
Hey, everything old is new again.
Yeah,
pretty much.
And potential to make money off of it.
True enough.
Marvel Comics and Attack on Titan crossover is in the works. So I know what they said. It was Spider-Man properties are involved in that. Garbage Pail Kids are coming to comics. I do remember them.
Yay!
Dirt approves. comic book creator of the Skyward book, Jeremy Dale, passed away this week, I believe at the age of 34.
Yes, please rest in peace. Far, far too young.
Condolences to him and his family. And if you like to help his family, a GoFundMe page has been created for that. Snake Plissken goes boom at Boom Studios, 10 years and whatnot. So that is the character from, was it Escape from New York?
Right, and Escape from LA.
LA?
Both. Yep, they're giving him a book. So just like, you know, hey, Ventura and Little China seems to have done pretty well for him. So here you go.
So today, Marvel revealed the creation of the Secret Worlds Battle World with a nice little teaser video basically saying how all the 16 teasers that were released is going to somehow end up with all these different realities being on this one world called Battle World where they sort of inhabitate the Earth like different continents. And this will, of course, involve Secret Wars. The only interesting thing from the video I noticed was they had the teaser for the end of the Ultimate Universe and the teaser for Attila and Rising both zooming in and landing on the same piece of land.
So really? But, I haven't watched the video yet, so.
Yeah, you can find it, of course, on many sites.
Yep. And I just tweeted the link out to the document in case anybody's following along, so it should be out there.
What document?
The document we're looking at now.
The show notes.
Yeah.
Look at you. Sharing. Hopefully no one will go and click on it and start messing with it.
No, they can't.
Oh, okay.
They could just look at it.
Ha!
Uh-huh. Good thing.
Yeah, I made sure that was it was not about anybody else but us.
Cool. So that is.
I know. According to this list, Agent 70 read Big Booty MILFs from Mars this week. And, according to this list, it's his click of the week. I don't know. It's weird.
Who is that published by? What?
Yeah. Right.
That's funny.
Oh, before we get into it, there's also, if you go down to the variant cover, there's also they also tease the comic cover for Secret Wars. And also, I thought I had this in here, but there we go. Everything Ends, the event, also spring 2015. It's a little up in the dock. So
right.
That's all going to tie into all, I'm assuming, going to tie into all those other teasers.
Or be the result of Secret Wars.
Yeah, probably. So. I guess they got to end up the time in stuff. Got to end up some kind of way. So
right.
Okay. So that's it for news, unless Hey, just saying, you say you added something, right?
No, it was just the...
that was it. Just talked about it.
The Battle World. We didn't have a Battle World entry until today, so...
So time to review some books.
Yay!
All right, so... Anyone want to throw one out that's on the top of their mind?
Yes. Rocket Raccoon number 5. Did anyone else read this?
The one Marvel book I didn't get to this week.
Oh, same, man. Here. This is a ton of fun. Literally, this was a story told with 3 words. I think we all know what they are.
No more mutants.
And...
And Xavier must die?
That's right. Funny. So, without spoiling anything, you know, the story is told mostly through graphics and through visual storytelling, and it's a ton of fun. It does go by quickly, but it also forces you to kind of go back and reread it a second time to really get a full sense of the storytelling that's happening from panel to panel and page to page. So I give this book a lot of credit for what it does and for forcing you to really appreciate visual storytelling as opposed to just, you know, the dialogue and the word balloons. So, you know, it's a real art, visual storytelling. And, you know, this book really, you know, really is exemplary in that regard. So this is actually one of my secret, you know, kind of a dark horse click of the week pick, believe it or not. I had a ball reading this book.
This had someone else on art, right?
Hold on, let me get to the credits page and I'll tell you. It is Jake Parker and Scotty Young. They trade off sequences, but it's still Scotty Young on script. But obviously he's not writing all that much in this issue. Spoiler alert. But it's a ton of fun. I really would say just I would recommend this as a read. It's just a fun, you know, it's a fun read, and like I said, it's a shining example, you know, a really good example of visual storytelling at its best.
You know, I was kind of wondering when they would do a book like this, just because this series was originally supposed to be called Rocket Raccoon and Groot.
Mm-hmm.
And they just the and Groot because they thought it was too long. And they just went with Rocket Raccoon. But I wondered if they would ever do a Groot
centric story. Specific,
yeah.
Rocket Raccoon, but you know, the mechanism for the story, and you know, the way the story is told is through Groot. It's a pretty interesting take on how to tell a story.
Oh,
and how Groot expresses himself too. So take a look at it. It's you know, like I said, for someone who, you know, I've always appreciated comic book art, and I think I've grown to appreciate storytelling more and more. Especially, you know, growing up, we saw so many good examples of comic book art, but when I got to the 90s, I saw so many bad examples of comic book art, where I finally learned what visual storytelling was, and I understood that, you know, some of the greats that had come before really knew how to tell a story with just their pictures, so.
All right. Let's see. Do I have one I want to bring up? Death of Wolverine, the Weapon X program number 1.
This is an interesting read.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it. Of course, it had Salvador Larra on art, so you can't. That'll always win me over.
That was its saving grace for me. I wasn't all that interested in it until I read that LaRocca was doing the art.
So the story is, it takes place like seconds after the end of the Death of Wolverine 4-issue series, and it follows some of the test subjects at the Weapon X facility as they, I guess, are like awakened and try to escape. So it's like 4, 3, 4, 5 new completely new characters who I actually didn't mind, and it's mostly told from the point of view of this character named Sharp. And right. There was a quick glimpse of Wolverine encased in adamantium as if he was Han Solo. And then there's a very big surprise at the very last page that we won't spoil.
Won't spoil it. Yeah, exactly. I was actually, you know, taken aback by it. I was like, oh, wow, they actually got me with that one.
So that's all we will say for that. But I wasn't sure what to think about this this miniseries. You know, you got Logan's Legacy, which looks like it can be ignored so far. But I'll keep up with the Weapon X program, because it actually looks like it might be more pertinent to this Wolverine story that they're trying to tell without leaving him.
Right.
Which, of course, will lead into the weak piece.
Right. I was going to say, I guess what you're referring to also is this Life After Logan that came out this week.
Oh, that did come out this week. I forgot to... Let me add that to my queue. Glad you brought that up.
Did you read it?
No, but I've at least flipped through it. Did anyone read it?
Oh, okay. I read it. I did not actually add it to my list because I didn't plan on talking about it. But just as a... You know, like you were mentioning one of those other... Death of Wolverine limited series, or the aftermath of the Death of Wolverine limited series that you don't really have to read, they don't really develop the story. This book deals with, you know, how some of the his fellow X-Men are dealing with his passing. And for that, it's interesting enough. You know, if you care about these characters, if you've been reading these characters for as long as some of us have been reading them, and, you know, the Life After Logan, this issue, you know, is kind of touching that way, where you're reading it and kind of appreciating how much of an impact he had on all these characters. So, and there's a couple of callbacks to scenes that if you have been reading for as long as some of us have, you'll recognize where, you know, what they're referring to. You know, one example is the Wolverine issue it's the same issue where, I apologize. If you guys recall the issue where Magneto drew the adamantium out of Wolverine, there is an issue where he's in the data room trying to prove himself, and that's where he pops the bone claws for the very first time. It's sort of reminiscent of that issue. I saw that. I was like, oh, I remember. It's a great visual callback. So, you know, if you've been reading for as long as some of us have, you know, it's cool to read this, but I don't think it's essential reading to get the full, you know, this doesn't exactly make it the full story, you know, unless you really want to see what the other X-Men, how the other X-Men are reacting.
From the preview pages, I saw it like it had some good art.
It's a mix of artists, it's a mix of writers, because it's short stories. It's almost like an anthology type thing, you know. It's like six pages of Cyclops' stories, pages of Nightcrawler and Colossus, and six pages of Armor and one of these other students in the Jean Grey school. I forget his name.
Okay. All right. So,
Dirt, yeah, Roddy.
Yeah, I got one. Speaking of X-Men, X-Men number 21. We're gonna get that one.
Okay.
So this is a continuation. This is the next to the last issue before Guggenheim's runs ends, and the X-Men are still out in space. And things are coming
X-Men
to a head.
X-Men in space.
Exactly. So we have.
Point when I stopped reading. I said the point when I stopped reading.
That's funny.
It's a pretty decent story. I mean, it's going along as good as you would expect it to. So we still like that. We still have the X-Men base. We still have Death I keep thinking of Deathstroke. Deathbird. Yeah. Deathbird and that whole situation with her being pregnant and what's going on with... There's a little going on because it's like, okay, everybody's at the peak. The peak's about to get overrun because they have a traitor in their midst. And they're trying to get Deathbird because she's pregnant and apparently either the baby is something important or they're just trying to get rid of Deathbird because for some other reason. So we finally pick up to where the X-Men finally figured out, uh-oh, something's not right, and then they got to get back to the peak and Storm's down and Cecilia Reyes is not doing too well and, you know, some
I had a lot of
fighting starts to happen. Yeah. It was
pretty
good
read. I had
fun
reading this. There was a lot of action going on. The story was moving along quickly, so I had fun reading it. Obviously, this is not the issue to pick up if it's your first issue of the book. It's kind of tough to pick up what's going on, but at the same time, it's still fun.
Yeah, like Rachel's still kind of pissed, and you don't want to pick in on this because you want to know why, even though it kind of brings that up.
Right. I had a lot of fun reading this. I appreciated it for what it was, you know? Lots of action, lots of, you know, interaction between the team members still. The traitor was, you know, still relatively interesting. You know, there's some palace intrigue or, some historical intrigue going on. So it's kind of, like I said, I had a lot of fun just for what it was.
Yeah, and has some generally funny bits into it.
Right.
You know. Or at least chuckle-worthy, I should say. So.
Definitely. All right. Dirt, you got anything? You got your
stuff
here on
this list. What about X-Men?
Oh, have we been staying away from that?
From what?
Axis.
Let's get into Axis.
Must we?
I feel like we've barely talked about it since it started.
It's because it's one of the in-between events.
Y'all waited for me to come back. That's all that was. I appreciate that.
I'm not sure if I like Remender telling universe expanding stories.
Why?
Because...
Mumbo-jumbo?
No.
No, it's not. I wish it was Mumbo-jumbo.
His story started as a sound, right? His Hulk... Why is Hulk stupid? In here, and he's Doc Green in his solo book.
Mm-hmm.
I have some notes down for this. I think that's my main gripe.
Can someone explain to me this character on the bottom of the cover? Does this come from anywhere else, or is this the first?
So apparently, yes, that character does come up. Somewhere else. I thought it was the first time too. The inverse Hulk or reverse Hulk, as I've been calling it, even with the name spelled backwards. I can't. So if Hulk gets real sad, it turns into this dude, and this dude's like real nasty.
Oh my God! There's a Marvel wiki on this.
Yeah. So he's an established.
Oh my God.
So he's been around before.
He has
Hulk,
shown up
number 30, 2011. Oh my God!
Mm-hmm. So, I said the same thing. I was like, wait, this can't be a new character. And sure enough, it wasn't. But because if it was a new character, it was stupid.
And didn't I barely remember reading this, but didn't he like all of a sudden just turn into Rope, Cole, whatever, how do you say
Clue?
Clue.
Then he just turned into Clue, like just out of the blue. Like, he didn't even get... What made him mad enough to turn it into Clue?
Well, no. Wait, you talking about this time? Or you talking about this time? Or yeah, this time it was because Hulk was sad.
Oh, Hulk sad.
Yeah.
Everything seems to be... I appreciate them, you know, trying to rush this series out there because it's happening so quickly after Original Sin ended. And, you know, this rapid succession, you know, three issues every week and then a break and then three more and then another break and then three more. But it definitely feels like everything's going by way too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They're rushing from one thing to the next. You can't really tell. I mean, the inversion happened, but they haven't really made it clear. They never made it clear in the pages that an inversion happened. It just seems like your favorite characters are just acting weird by themselves.
Well, you would have had to infer from like a page from last issue when it happened.
Right.
Because it does say it's just a matter of you don't really, this is basically them saying, okay, well, stuff's starting to happen and you're starting to see them act differently. And I'm sorry, back up. Am I the only one getting vibes from other events off of this?
Getting what?
Vibes from other events.
Oh.
Because there's part of this is like, not necessarily, I haven't read AVX, so I don't know too much about that one, but Civil War just in spots. And yes. House of M, yes. Like those two are kind of showing up, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just like it just seems like it was, I don't know,
done already.
Yeah, parts of it. It's just like, hey, let's take these parts of these books that people liked and throw them into an event.
But yeah, I'm not enjoying this as much as I thought I would. I do appreciate the X-Men, I guess, banding together, even though it's like. They're banding them together because they're all inverted, I'm assuming.
Right.
Just bringing them together.
Right, and don't get me started on, wait, what happened? Apocalypse has grown what? Evan is what? You know? So.
Well, and there's also the whole, Falcon Cap, whatever you want to call him, how he just suddenly decides he's going to punch Nick Fury in the face for no reason.
Oh, right. Wait, no, he wants to kill Red Skull. Yeah, exactly. He just wants to kill. I'm like, what? Wait, where's the line? Wait, hold on. This is awful dialogue. Where does he say? This is. Wait, hold on. A fog was lifted. I've been liberated of the terrible lifelong affliction of putting others' needs ahead of my own. What, Remender? Right. What? What?
So it's basically like everybody who was on, I assume they're going to get, like, everybody, it's just like the brain blast from whatever the last event was that I can't remember right now. And everybody got affected. It's just like, it's basically everybody that was in Genosha got affected, but I got a feeling that won't be totally the case.
Yeah, I'm assuming that there's some sort of, like, mind control thing that's still, you know, bugging them that at some point they're going to have to crack out of, but...
Right.
Well, that's the inversion, so...
Well, but the problem is it feels unnatural. Like, even if, let's say for the sake of argument, that Captain America now suddenly has this evil tendency. He wants to kill Red Skull. He wants to do the wrong thing. He doesn't talk like that when he's the good guy. Why would he talk like that now that he's being drawn to being a bad guy? Just the dialogue just simply doesn't fit the character, period. All you've changed is his motivations. You're not changing his vocabulary.
Everyone's vocabulary. Maybe that's the reason I'm not enjoying this, because everyone's vocabulary sounds messed up. But then even people were sounding weird before the inversion to me.
I don't know. Actually, before the inversion, I was kind of digging where it was going. I just wanted to see how they was going to get to where everything was going to get better. And I'm from not understanding, it's going to flip-flop again by accounts.
The third act?
Yeah, I guess so. But the thing about it was, it's like, yeah, just like everything you guys have said about, like, Cap being, you know, the way he was, and then, you know, the part with Jarvis and Hulk and that whole clue mess. It's like,
this yeah, is, Jarvis this is also just pops out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Not that
so I guess they had to get to the point of like, okay, we want to make sure that people know that the Avengers have gone evil, so put that part in there, and then, you know. So I guess it's going to be like, okay, so the Red Skull did actually get Xavier's mind back or something, and everybody else was the one affected with the evil, I guess is the case. Would it sound like it's going to be? I don't know. Like, it just seems like that's how it's going to read.
I think it's the magic. I think the magic screwed up. I think the magic, basically inverted everyone the wrong way. So
is Brother Voodoo going to be the only one that can invert everything back the way it is?
Well, who knows? So. It's Remender writing it. It is Remender writing it.
Wait, and he's still dead, or am I?
Yes, he is still dead.
He's going to show back up.
Sure. Yeah.
Dirt, tell me about, there's something book, let's see, there was a book I was going to ask you about, Green Arrow 36.
Ah, I have to go all the way over to the DC. What about it?
How was it?
It was okay. Part of the problem is that the last arc, the last writer and artist was so good that this follow-up just seems there. Like, there's, it doesn't feel special in any way. It doesn't feel like there's any story being told, any like, the last year or so of Green Lantern has, or Green Lantern, Green Arrow, has been dealing with his origin and how his father abandoned him and how he went through these trials and, you know, going back to how he became Green Arrow and what it really meant. And, you know, he's the Arrow tribe, and then there's the Mask tribe, and there's the Sword tribe, and, you know, whatever. And then now this follow-up story is some super intelligent lady was hired to kill him because he actually seems like a decent guy. And so she tells him, and they're going to join a team and find the bad guy who's trying to kill him. And I don't know. It just seems like nothing. It's inoffensive, but it's unexciting.
Which probably was to be expected. Like I said, coming off the last creative team.
And this is the one, I think this is the arc written by the TV show guys, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Pressburg. Yeah. I was going to ask, was that Felicity on the cover? Because that's...
Yeah.
And I didn't know that she was already in the universe before. Maybe pre-New 52.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a real character, but...
That she was created for the TV.
Well, and it was also one of those things where when they started in the New 52, he was very arrogant. He had all the trick arrows. He had all the money. And then they dismantled him. They broke up his company. He lost control. He lost all his money. His trick arrows were for the most part taken away, so he's just using regular arrows and would sparingly have one or two trick ones that he would go to if he really needed to. Whereas now, in this arc, he's kind of back to whatever he needs, somehow he can afford it. He's got a million different trick arrows he's pulling out all the time. It just seems like everything they did in the last arc to make it interesting, they've kind of forgotten about and just kind of gone back to just kind of the status quo.
Gotcha.
Great.
Let's see. Any others to be thrown out? I will say Justice League 3000 number 11 ends with another surprising final page that if you haven't been reading the Future Solicits, it will be a surprise to you at least.
Okay.
I got one. Fiction Squad number 2.
Ah, I still need to read the first issue of that.
Same.
Yeah, it's pretty good, I thought. So we going on from the last issue where we see, I guess, well, something happens at the end of the last issue that our hero or whoever he is, Frankie Mack, the detective, is still investigating. We start to see more new characters come in, like the mayor. Who looks like Dr. Jekyll, I'm thinking. I'm not sure who's that supposed to be. And I've kind of just skimmed through it. But you start seeing new characters come in, and they're trying to wrap up the investigation because the mayor, as it seems, is in on the take with the queen and her people, you know, because, you know, the queen has is a gang. So you start to see little bits of that start to show, and then Frankie and Simon are still trying to get to the bottom of what's really going on, you know, with all the impending gang war that's about to happen. And it is a really good read. You know, you start seeing all the fairy tale people come in and out, and lunches they're in. So pick up that book; it's pretty cool. And it's like this is 2 of 6, so it's limited.
So it's like a know their fables were fairy tale characters.
Kinda, yeah. This is pretty much set in a fable. It's called Fablewood, so it's the universe is basically that, but not. It's not like in fables where okay they got ran out or something. Just like it's just like all of the different genres of books had their own land, as opposed to okay, hey, everybody's in this one land and got thrown out of there because of whatever happened. So everybody's kind of coexisting in their own place, but this just happened to be taking place in one land.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/coldslither. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/coldslither.
Yeah, a lot of they're like, oh, it's better than WWE. Why don't they put that on TV? And because it would crash and burn within the first month. It really would. It would turn into Raw.
I love Sam's love of NXT. It's awesome. it's awesome. You despise it.
I don't think he despises the presentation. I think he despises the talent on it.
I despise the recognition it gets. Like, I hate how people talk about it. And then they get butthurt when, like, the characters go to the main roster and they change their gimmick. They're like, who was he like these on NXT?
Yeah, they're terrible. They're terrible gimmicks for the main roster. Terrible.
Hi, this is Sam.
Hi, this is Greg.
And this is Don DeLaRente. And you're listening to the brand new WrestleCast, the only pro wrestling podcast that provides color commentary with color.
And you can find us each week on the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit ColdSlitherPodcast.com, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the right of the page. Scroll down and you'll be able to shop at Amazon through us. There you can buy books, games, movies, music, and much more at Amazon, while at the same time helping us manage the cost of our network and keep our podcast free for you.
Actually,
anyone else want to go?
Yeah, let me jump over to something real quick. Tooth and Claw, number one. This book is basically a world of animals. They live in a society where certain animals that live in the sky are the elite class, and you've got animals that live on the ground, and they're kind of the worker class, and there's magic, and they pray to all these different gods, and it's just a completely different world, a completely different society that they've built. And the story, for the most part, for a first issue, it just does the job of establishing who your characters are, what the society is like. You can see the, the elite versus the worker class, clash kind of going on. But nothing really develops in this issue. So it does a fine job of laying the groundwork for something more to come. But there's nothing really kind of exciting to grab a hold of you in this first issue to really pull you in. But Image just announced that issue one sold out and it's going to a second printing, which boggles my mind because Image just started a new program for retailers. And they sent us, we are one of the stores that opted in on this program, they sent us, they floored 5 extra copies of Tooth and Claw to put on this display. And here's the alternate cover for Tooth and Claw. Here's the regular cover for Tooth and Claw. If you look closely, all they did was move the Image logo from one side of the screen to the other.
Ah!
So okay. In the regular one, it's on the right corner, and then on the special retailer edition, it's on the left corner, and it has stars around it, kind of like the old DC logo. So we have 25 extra issues of this sitting in our store that may or may not get sold. And what they did is they didn't charge us for them. They sent it to us, and we sell them, and then after 30 days or 60 days, whatever it is, any unsold copies, we have the option of sending them back in order to get, they won't charge us for the ones we send back. So they send us 25. If we send them 20 back, then we will only be charged for the 5 that we sold. Or we could keep them all if we wanted to, you know, whatever. So we've got 25 copies sitting here. Now, I'm sure our store is not the only store that signed up for this program. I'm pretty sure a lot of stores signed up for this program. So you literally have hundreds of copies of this book out there that are sent to retailers that retailers very well may not sell and just send back to them to be pulped. So they're advertising that the book is sold out and going to a second printing, even though there are literally hundreds and hundreds of this book just floating out there that are probably going to be returned to Image when that window closes. So they can say it's sold out all they want. Well, we've got no more left in the warehouse. Well, yeah, sure, but in a month, you might have another 600 to 1,000 copies coming back, you know? So that's another one of those marketing hype things that just shows you how little trust you should put into press releases.
So basically what you're saying is Image is making it, you know, hyping up stuff to say it's, you know, sold out when maybe it didn't?
Well, yeah, like right now they're saying it's sold out, but we have 25 copies sitting in our store. Like, we have our normal order. Like, we ordered the regular cover in the normal numbers that we always would have. Mm-hmm. So we have those copies in our store to sell. But then they sent us an additional stack of 25, and we're not, you know, a huge store. If Midtown Comics were to sign up for this, I'm sure that they would have gotten maybe 200 copies, whereas we got 25 copies, you know, because they're in downtown New York City. I'm sure they're selling a whole lot more. So they're saying it's sold out, even though, generally speaking, the sellout means that retailers have bought all the copies from the distributors. Diamond Comics doesn't have any more copies to send out. And while that very well may be true right now, that there are no more copies to send out, in a month, when it's time to send the unsold ones back, they're going to have hundreds and hundreds of copies coming back. That are they going to pulp them? Are they going to turn around and try to, you know, liquidate them? Are they going to just sell them out as reorders? You know, it's like, what's going to happen to all these hundreds of copies that haven't sold, that aren't going to sell? You know, it's just kind of one of those things where they say it's a sellout and we got to print more to keep up with demand, even though there are hundreds of copies sitting there unsold that Image is not going to make any money off of. They're going to be sent back eventually.
Very interesting. And I'm sure they, and it's funny because I'm sure they only do this with certain creators.
Yeah, well, there are certain books, like, for instance, Birthright, we also got extra copies of. So this week it was Birthright.
Number and, two, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to see if I have both.
I actually reviewed that, or I actually read that, too. I'll bring it up later.
I read it too. I didn't have a chance to add it to my my list.
It was the last book I added.
Yeah. But they sent us a whole bunch of extra copies of Birthright. And then next week they're going to be sending us extra copies of Witches, the Scott Snyder book.
I heard that one sold like 90, the first issue sold 90,000 copies. Sounds like
it's already been optioned for, you know, TV or movie. I forget which one it is, but. But you know, I mean, those are both books that they're going to say, hey, look at how many we printed. But in this case, just because they've been printed and just because they've been sent to retailers, they aren't technically sold because we can send the unsold ones back just like they used to do on the newsstand. So they're printed versus they're sold is not going to be the same on these books. And that's something you usually don't see on the direct market. That's one of the whole points of the direct market. So they're playing with those numbers. It's just kind of funny how, you know, they're sitting there saying, oh, it's sold out, we got to print more, and I'm sitting there in the store looking at the stack that they sent us. Because, like I said, we have our regular numbers of the book that we ordered. These are an extra 25 copies on top of that.
Artificial hype.
Hmm. Yeah.
Hope my book, future books, are overhyped like this.
Oh, love it.
One other thing. Nailbiter came out this week, and this is the issue with Brian Michael Bendis guest starring in it. He is not a writer of this issue. He appears as the comic book writer, Brian Michael Bendis, showing up in this town trying to follow people around and write down their dialogue so that the dialogue in his future comics sounds more like regular people talking and having conversations.
Who wants to guess that this issue sold out?
Mm.
Yeah, this one might. Yeah.
I saw one page of it. It was kind of amusing because I think he got into a conversation with somebody and was like, "You killed Peter Parker." I'm like, "Oh man." So to kind of put that little
the catch up on. But quickly, speaking of Birthright, that I put in my notes, that is a series I'm going to try to keep up with monthly as it comes out. Of course, it stars a kid. It's like a fantasy tale book of a kid who was playing with his father in the woods, went off to find a football or whatever they were playing with, and never came back. His dad went looking for him and couldn't find him, and he was like missing for like a year. And all of a sudden he shows back up and he's like an adult warrior, got shirtless, you know, Conan looking fella.
Right.
And half the book deals with, you know, him being back and his family trying to decide if that's really their son or not. You know, police have him in police custody because he, you know, shows up with all this, you know, swords. Yeah, weaponry. And then the other half of the story is showing his tales of where he went off to, I guess, transported to this other magical land where he's supposed to be the savior. And the first issue ended on a like
cliffhanger, yeah,
which fits up, and of course is explained, well, not explained, but shown more of in this issue. But I enjoyed Birthright. I forget the artist's name, but he makes it enjoyable as well.
He's a co-creator. Let me pull it up real quick. I enjoyed this book too. Not as much as I enjoyed the first one, to be perfectly honest. But it's probably just because it's the second issue of a longer story. So, you know, it's furthering the story. So maybe that's why it wasn't as fresh as the first issue was to me. But I enjoyed it. I'm trying to pull up.
I got it up. Andre Bresson.
There you go. So, you know, kudos to him. He's, you know, he's doing a great job on this book. It looks beautiful.
And here's the alternate cover that we were sent. And if you notice the logo down in the bottom corner, it's the same image eye, but it's in the circle with the little stars.
So that's
That's how you know it's from that retailer program.
That's funny.
Membership has its privileges.
That is funny.
I hope to also have a Skybound future image book as well.
Tim, just go ahead. Marvel, you want to take Marvel, DC, Cisco? I mean, you just want to go ahead and just throw them all out there while you're at it?
There you go. Yeah.
You know, I know some guys in Awesome Comics I could talk to for you.
Yeah.
Damn. Sure. Got
their contact info, too. Mm-hmm. All right.
Hey, Tim, I got a question. Star-Lord, what's up with that one?
I was making the comparison of Star-Lord and the Nova series, how both of them I went in hesitantly, like, I don't care about this. But reading each issue has made me become a fan of the characters. And I'm not even sure if I'm really a fan of the Star-Lord character, but I'm enjoying the series more than maybe the character. And I actually enjoyed this issue. This might be my favorite issue so far, because it introduced the dark version of the Guardians, the Slaughter Squad, who is Mr. Knife's hit squad. And is, of course, the name, the not device, but the artifact involved in the and the artifact involved in the X-Men Guardians Cosmic crossover next year. I believe it's next year it starts.
Yeah.
Beginning of next year. And Paco Medina's art is awesome. David Curiel's colors make it pop. He was one of the colorists on, well, he actually might still be the colorist on Nova. So he does nice cosmic colors. Have a guest appearance by one of the Guardians of the Galaxy here. I guess that's what made me enjoy it. It was like the little swerve that Star-Lord played on this chameleon horse-raced alien. Is that Beta Ray Bill's?
No,
that's not.
Aren't the race? Chameleons? Aren't the chameleons from Power Pack?
I don't know.
Oh, gee, that might be the case.
It's K-Y-M-E-L-L-I-A-N-S or something like that, right? I have not been reading the Star-Lord series, so I couldn't tell you for sure. But I if I recall, those are the aliens that are connected to Power Pack.
And also, I like how, at least so far, sort of, there's been like an overall sort of theme in the Star-Lord series, which is this bounty, blood bounty that's on them. But every issue's kind of been just self-contained, one-and-done story. And I'm enjoying Sam. I wasn't a big fan of his Avengers AI and his Uncanny X-Force stuff.
Hey, Agents AI was all right. Here.
I enjoyed it near the end when I checked out.
Well, yeah, when it was about the end and it was like, just go ahead and do what you got to do, and it got crazy. Yeah, it really got good, but it was decent.
I love it. All right.
But yes, Agent 70, that was from Power Pack.
Yeah!
So how long before Power Pack comes back?
Not long.
I heard like 3 different answers.
Well, listen, if Big Hero 6 does as well as we think it probably will, they're going to mine something else that's like on the kid-friendly side for something like that. And did you guys happen to
give Big Hero 6 a book? That's all. They don't have to go anywhere else with that.
Right. I was about to say, speaking of like Disney, just real quick, did you guys happen to hear today that they announced the Toy Story 4?
Oh yeah.
No, it didn't.
Yes. That like passed across my Facebook feed in the afternoon. I was like, what?
I know
it's not really comic related, but it's still.
Does it still make money? Yes. Then we're gonna keep making it.
Which is weird because they in the beginning they were like no sequels, and they killed that one a few years ago. So.
Right, but I felt like they told the best story that they could. They told a nice trilogy. Why keep mining that? But I guess that's where the money is.
Yeah, but this one's gonna have Star Wars in it.
Ah, and Marvel.
Yeah.
So there's gonna be Marvel toys in this. Can you imagine?
Episode 7 title was released.
Oh, was it?
Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Oh, that's what that was about. Okay.
Come on, news guy.
No, I saw that.
Come on, Clark. You got to get on top of your game.
I saw that, but I didn't look into what that was. I saw people tweeting about it. I was like,
like, what is this nonsense?
Yeah. So I was like, I'll look into that later. It's probably something that's people crazy. Oh, okay.
That's funny. That's funny. All right. I see you guys read Gotham Academy number 2. At least Tim did. What about Dirt? You read it also. What do you think?
It was okay. Not as good, I don't think, as the first issue. I mean, the first issue, I think, was a little more interesting than this one. What this one does is it sets up a mystery. Mm-hmm. To be resolved in some future issue. So this was more about laying the groundwork of whatever mysterious thing happened to this girl and her mother over the course of the last summer. At the end of the first issue, kind of this cliffhanger where you saw some sort of creature staring out through a crack in one of the walls.
Right.
And they totally didn't do anything with it.
That's right. Issue. That was kind of a shock. I kept flipping through this issue looking for that, and nothing came of it, and I was very surprised by that, too.
The only thing that seemed to make mention of it is they're reading some legend about a Cobblepot aunt or great aunt or somebody to Oswald who was apparently held captive inside this building that is now part of the Academy. So I guess you're supposed to assume it's her or her weird offspring after all these years. I don't know exactly, but that's the only thing I saw that really kind of threaded into that. Otherwise, it went off in some other obscure direction of something, some sort of weird seance or whatever going on. And
whatever happened to this girl.
Yeah, and this girl and her mom, something happened to them. We don't know what it was. And
who could her mom be?
She doesn't really
remember. Oh, yeah. Who could her mom be?
At this point, about as educated a guess I could make about who her mom is the original Wendy's girl. Because with the amount of clues that they've given us, I don't know.
So yeah, they haven't given clues. Or have they?
Right.
Agent 70. Sum up, well, not sum up, but tell us about the finale of Superman Unchained number 9.
He loved it. It was
there you go. Book. That says it all.
His dirt
line. I'm like, Well, I'm glad it's over.
Should I flip through it for Jim Lee's art, at least?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's worth it for that. You know, and that's probably what kept me flipping through it all. So it's really one of the more... It's definitely not... It wasn't the most fun read in the world. I don't know if I read number 8, so I don't recall how we got to this point. So I'm reading this like, what? Where? What's going on? How did we get here? I think I read number 8, but I'm not 100% sure. So... you know, and it's just not a good thing where I can't, you know, the production delays on this obviously hinder the storytelling. I'm reading this and I'm still confused as to how this is supposed where the current Justice League comic is, because Luthor's acting a certain way and it just doesn't jive with what is going on in Justice League. But obviously, because of the production delays on this, this is not set in the immediate continuity of the New 52. It's worth it to flip through for the art. Beyond that, there's not much to it. There's not much here that we probably didn't understand about Superman. I hate to say that Snyder's not exactly treading on new, he isn't exactly trailblazing a new path into Superman's mythos and, you know, describing like a kind of pathos that he has in terms of, you know, being a human and erring as a human does and not being like this shining beacon of light, you know? And that's sort of what the crux of the story is. You know, like I said, it's nothing earth-shattering. You can read it for the art. Doesn't really lead you anywhere. You know, it doesn't leave you anywhere different at the end of the story. So, you know, all in all, a pretty disappointing limited series.
I think this will work as a trade paperback that someone who hasn't read any DC in a couple years will pick up this one book and read through the story, and you get Lex Luthor, you get Lois Lane, you get Jimmy Olsen.
You get smack those kind of high points and Wonder Woman. Yeah,
right. It's just kind of one of those. Put it in Barnes and Noble. People will buy it for Christmas for somebody who's kind of a lapsed comic fan who's still somewhat interested, and they'll enjoy it for the standalone story it is.
Which is probably true.
Yeah, probably right.
Let's see. What else interesting did I read? Amazing Spider-Man number 9 started beginning of Spider-Verse. You can read my review on popculturenetwork.com and theclicknation.com.
Yay!
So,
I forgot to post that.
It will be up.
You sent me that when I was at work this morning. And yeah. I totally forgot about it.
That was my bad. So Oliver Corpwell, who is one of the Marvel's main two event artists, kicks this off with Justin Ponser on art or color art. Mm-hmm. So pages look great. You have a whole bunch of Spider-Men and women from different realities and universes assembling here to take on Merlin and his family, the Inheritors. And New Warriors make a quick, like, one panel
appearance. And brutal appearance.
Okay.
It's a brutal appearance.
At least they're not all killed.
Spoiler alert.
But yeah. It was a very quick hitting issue.
Yeah. They were moving things forward in this issue, definitely.
So.
And you know, I appreciated that they delved a little bit more into the Inheritors. That's the group of villains, especially in the backup story. It was kind of cool to see, spoiler alert, some of the Inheritors' hounds, we'll put it that way. You know, kind of like in the tradition of Ahab in the X-books. They have their hounds, and to see who their hounds are based off of was kind of cool. I was like, oh, wow, Thomas Fireheart, you've come so far. If you don't know who Thomas Fireheart is, that's Puma. So, you know, I was pretty jazzed to see at least those characters make an appearance in this. I appreciated this book for moving the story along. I felt like this and the team-up book that came out this week.
I was going to ask about that.
Really worked well together, more so than I think some of the other tie-in books to previous crossovers have in the past. So if someone were to ask me, do I need to read this to really get what's going on in Spider-Verse, I would probably say yes with regards to the team-up book.
I will say for, at least so far, Axis tie-ins and Spider-Verse tie-ins will be short and not being read.
So get that phone.
Yeah, for real.
Let me go see who this is. Be back.
Oh, I love it. Love it. Anyway. Well,
it's Dan Slott. He's calling his show.
I'll die laughing. Oh, my goodness. That's comedy. That is comedy.
Well, I did enjoy Detective Comics this week.
Do tell.
I did read this. Throw it in there.
Once again, the John Paul Leon artwork is, for me, the main draw into the story, because I love his artwork. He, as far as I'm concerned, he just never does wrong with anything that he draws. I love the atmosphere, the mood that he gives.
I wish it was just a little less muddy, but I generally agree with you.
Well, I like that dark. It's more of a European style. Mm-hmm. It has the same roots that someone like a Mike Mignola has working on Hellboy. You can see how they come from the same base growing out of there. So, but the story, following up from the last issue where we find out it was a eco-terrorist and he's got this virus out there that's killing people, and he's holding basically the airport hostage. Batman actually, you see him reaching out to Grayson. You see a bit of a crossover there into that title, so you see how those books are still connected, even though Grayson has gone off, does his own thing. It still draws it back in, so I enjoyed having that in the storyline. And it also was one of those that reminded me of the Batman stories that I grew up in. When I was reading, I got into comics when I was, I don't know, 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, so during the days of the Jim Aparo Batman, the Jim Starlin stories, the stories, most of them were one-and-done type stories, but they always had, the characters that Batman interacts with, he always treats them with, I want to say a certain dignity.
Right.
Which you haven't seen a lot of recently. He's always so motivated and so dark and whatever. And this kind of brought that back where he's dealing with a, I guess it was a security guy, security guard at the
airport. He's one of the police chiefs.
Oh, is he the police? Okay. Well, anyway.
Right.
He's training him. You get the John McClane type of relationship with the dad from Family Matters. Type of thing going on.
Reginald Bell Johnson.
Yeah, the same way he's treating that police chief guy. And so it really made it feel like the Batman I grew up in that era, in the late 80s, right. You know, Batman story.
I agree that I got that same vibe, although... You know, my recollection of Batman from that era is a little different, but I definitely agree that it's different. This is a different take on Batman than what's currently in most of the Batman books.
It's a nice change of pace.
Definitely.
And I like how, like, they brought Grayson in, but it didn't feel like how some of the, like with Batman Eternal, how they're throwing just everybody at the wall, you know, to see who sticks and who doesn't. The way they, you know, 9 times out of 10, when Batman calls out for another character, he calls out for all of them. So right. It's like he makes a phone call and suddenly you have Batgirl and Red Robin and Red Hood and Batwing and, you know, whoever is just like all showing up at once. And this is him calling one specific person who's part of his team who can deal with something that's happening on the other side of the world that's tied into what he's working on here. It makes that Bat family make more sense than just, I need a whole bunch of people to help me out, come to the cave, and let's have sandwiches.
I thought that Grayson obtaining the information he did was kind of convenient, you know? But
I loved how he did it in the Jack Bauer style.
Yeah. I just thought it was convenient that the guy he happened to be interrogating had this information. You know, it's funny that you mentioned Batman Eternal this week. Did you read it?
No.
Honestly, this week's Batman Eternal features Alfred Pennyworth and Bane. It was actually a fairly entertaining read. I've been trying my best to keep up with Batman Eternal, and I think I talked about this last week where we're dealing with... The destruction of... Spoiler alert, where the hell is the bell? The destruction of Arkham Asylum, you know, which leads directly into Arkham Manor. So this is still the aftermath of the fall of Arkham Asylum and dealing with the survivors. And I thought this issue was very well done in the sense that, you know, we're dealing with the eventual breakout of the inmates and... you know, how Gotham PD and how GCPD and the fire department deal with this. And, you know, Batman's reaction to, you know, and how he's trying to deal with it. But it's actually one of the more action-packed issues of Eternal, probably, and one of the ones it's one of the issues I've enjoyed most, probably because we didn't have to deal with, whatchamacallit, Deacon, what's his name?
Blackfire.
Yeah, Blackfire. We have to deal with magic. We don't have to deal with any of that stuff. You know, just
magic.
Exactly. This is. I just don't feel like that stuff really. Go ahead.
They have okay. Joseph Blackfire is in Batman Eternal, and he actually has magical powers.
Oh, he did. Spoiler alert.
Well, because he was in The Cult.
Right.
Which was Jim Starlin and Bernie Wrightson.
Right.
And I love that book, even though a lot of people don't. But
it was
in
okay.
That book,
I remember reading it.
But in that book, you know, you thought that he had magical powers, but it turns out he just has drugs and is really good at manipulating people.
Right.
And so
he was resurrected, I think, or something like that, and he came back with actual powers. Yeah, you haven't been reading Eternal lately, huh?
No, I gave up when they did that one issue that was like the Brazilian soap opera.
Yeah,
that's a long time ago.
That's where I kind of fell off too.
It had artwork that looked like some middle school arts project, and. I felt like I'd been punked. So.
Then I saw other sites like praising it.
God. That's the one that just made me hate this. After reading that issue, I just didn't want to read anything else from the series. Like, that totally killed it.
Right.
Yeah.
What's funny is that this issue is a very Batman issue. It's not out of the. This would not be out of place in a regular series of Batman, as opposed to this weekly BS where it forces us to keep up all the time. Rapid reviews. Green Lantern number 36. Anyone read that?
Yeah.
Dirt's the one keeping up with Godhead.
Right, so this is just the next chapter in that Godhead series. We have the Green Lantern Corps. Well, most of the Lantern Corps is now taking refuge on... is it New Korugar or just Korugar?
I think it's just Korugar.
Right, so on Korugar, taking refuge with the with Sinestro and his Corps, we have the Guardians showing up and revealing to everyone, hey, guess what? Where's the damn spoiler alert? Kyle Rayner's alive, but he's been taken. We get some of the plot moving forward. This is one of the crossover issues that sort of fills in some of the gaps and moves things forward incrementally. Is it crucial for your understanding of the story? Probably. This is probably not one of the crossover issues that you should miss. That's my take on it.
And one thing that I would say is I really enjoyed the conversation between Sinestro and Hal.
Yeah.
Where they talk about the fact that even though they spend most of their time as enemies, they do still kind of have this warped respect for each other,
mm-hmm.
which it's one of those things where it's like, I can't deny
how I can't quit you as
adversary. Yeah, well. But it's this idea that you know, you are basically my equal, and I have to respect that, even though we don't agree on the outcome that we're working towards.
Right.
And it's well, I didn't pay any attention to the details on this cover.
Right.
Well, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say that they have different methods. They don't agree with each other's methods, but they're both effective. So that's really that's where they keep butting heads.
Right. Well, and in the end, Sinestro does what he does to protect his people, and Hal recognizes and respects that Sinestro's doing it for the sake of people other than Sinestro, even though he doesn't like the way Sinestro does what he does to save his people.
Right.
He at least respects the fact that he is trying to save his people. But what I was going to say is I didn't pay any attention really to this cover. I just kind of grabbed it, opened it up, and started reading, and the cover actually gives away what would be the big spoiler of the book, and that is you see the Black Lantern becoming involved now. And so when I started reading, and again, not having paid any attention to the cover, I start reading and I'm thinking, well, what about the Black Lantern? Because he doesn't fit the rest of the spectrum. And of course, that's exactly where the story goes.
I was in the same boat. I did not pay much attention to the cover, and I was surprised as anyone. I was like, oh, okay, I forgot about this guy. I'm not as much of a, I haven't been following along, so it kind of took me for a loop right there. I was like, oh, I forgot about this guy. He's still around.
My takeaway from the cover is it looks like one of those images where you have to like look through the
it's not a schooner.
That's right. I don't see a ship.
Yeah, I don't see a ship. Where's the dolphins swimming through the ocean?
Oh, no.
It's not a schooner. It's a sailboat.
Oh,
yeah, with the Easter Bunny is just a guy in a suit.
Oh, no.
For those of you who don't know, that's a Marvel reference.
Oh, mercy. Shout out to Kevin Smith.
The only other book I have to mention is Hulk number 8. It's Doc Green versus Red She-Hulk as another gamma radiated character goes down. Right. And I do like the last two issues where, you know, Omega Hulk is basically focused on the different Hulks running around. But like last issue, it started off with him checking in on Hulkling, who
at least, not really a Hulk, right?
He's not really a Hulk, but he just wanted to make sure, you know, he doesn't have any gamma in his system. And then this issue starts off with him checking on someone else that has been known to have gamma in his system. I won't say who, but I like those little, you know, it carried over to this issue as well.
Right. And spoiler alert, I was about to say spoiler alert, we actually find out who shot Bruce Banner way back when.
Oh, yeah. Forgot all about that. That's kind of quickly revealed and resolved and moved along.
I was just about to ask, does this have shed any light on Dumb Hulk from Axis? But
nope.
Yeah, okay.
Or Sad Hulk. Not Sad Hulk.
Yeah, sure, Sad Hulk. Oh, Sad Hulk.
Great.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
How do you say Cole?
Clue.
Yeah, Clue.
That's the way I'm taking it.
Yeah, Clue.
Or Claw.
Clue is going to be appearing in Nova, I believe.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I prefer to say Clue because it reminds me of a hip-hop DJ, so I could just say it like that.
DJ Clue.
Yeah.
Oh, mercy. That's funny.
Well, let's see. I got one, Velvet number 8. So, real quick, this is, for those unaware, this is Brubaker, Ed Brubaker, and Steve Epting doing spy stuff as they want to do. Imagine if Moneypenny from James Bond ended up secretly being the best spy that the agency ever had, even though, you know, she was never an agent. That's pretty much who Velvet Templeton is. Now, the thing is that she got framed for something that happened, and she's in the midst of trying to get to the bottom of what's going on, so she has to use all her tricks to get going. There's really not much forward momentum in this book, but she put a plan in last issue that she is going through now. And this is a pretty interesting, well, this is a paced book, let's say. So if you are into that kind of stuff, it is a pretty good read.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm out of things to talk about because I don't think I have any more books to talk about.
So nobody read Grayson, huh?
No, not yet.
Not yet. I still haven't read the last issue. I got to get caught up. That and Spread, I wanted to read. I didn't have time.
I skimmed Spread. You know, because I don't remember what happened the last issue. I skimmed it.
I finished Grayson number 3 over the weekend, actually. Not even realizing that the next issue came out this week.
I tried reading American Legends, but it is written, the majority of it is written in this almost like calligraphy type font, like it's someone writing in their diary, and it is so hard. It is in these yellow dialogue bubbles, like it's supposed to be old parchment or something, and it's just really difficult to read. Like, I really wish they hadn't have chosen that. I ended up giving up because I just couldn't. You had to focus so hard on the letters to figure out what it was they were actually saying. I gave up.
Wow.
That's rough.
Dirt, I saw you read Action 36. What do you think?
Oh, I did read Action 36.
I still haven't read 35.
Boom, boom. Let's see. I'm trying to remember what happened in this. Smallville.
I was about to say, I read this. Yeah, I read this, and it's very Halloween-ish.
Yeah, they missed this, right? By a week.
Yeah.
Because some sort of monster creature is in Smallville, and everybody's having nightmares of dead people coming dead back people. To life. And then, sure enough, this thing shows up in the graveyard and starts animating dead bodies. And I guess the real takeaway from this issue is that there's something bigger happening in Smallville than just this monster. And you don't really know what it is yet, and it will be revealed at some point. I don't know if that's just the Greg Pak mystery style, of doing things. Just having some random character going, well, we're going to be in trouble if he figures out what's really going on around here. And right. then that's your clue.
That, there's something that was else the that was the cliffhanger too, because you know, we basically find ourselves with, you know, maybe a body snatcher type thing, maybe an alien thing. We're not sure yet. So, you know, that's the cliffhanger for the next issue.
I just have this weird, I don't know, feeling that somehow this is going to be some sort of misunderstanding, that this alien started animating dead bodies, thinking it'd be easier for them to interact with humans if they saw other humans, and they just happened to grab dead bodies, which freaks out people, but the alien wouldn't know that. I don't know if that's where it's going or not, but that's just the idea that came to my mind when I was reading it.
That's funny.
It's just going to be this really weird misunderstanding.
It's a heck of a misunderstanding. All right.
But we do see that Lana Lang and John Henry Irons are now a couple.
Mm-hmm. I think they were developing. Yeah, I was going to say they were developing that, I think, in the last few issues of Action. You know, with the whole Brainiac thing. So nice to see that they're keeping that going.
Lana really has become a character in Action. Like, she's becoming the secondary character on that book.
Yes.
Right.
Agreed.
So.
This podcast is being sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Come visit us at ColdSlitherPodcast.com and then click on the link through our front page to MyComicShop.com. Shop there and keep the podcast going free. And you'll get new releases of comic books delivered right to your door. MyComicShop.com through ColdSlitherPodcast.com. Do it today.
All right.
Click to the week.
Yeah, click of the week time.
Mine.
I'm going with Detective.
Really?
I'm jumping right in with that one because I love the artwork. I can't get past the artwork. Like, I don't care. The story could be about two guys making toast. I don't care. That artwork was just great. But I love the way that they had that Die Hard vibe with John McClane and the dad from Family Matters.
Right. I was going to say, that cover kind of reminded me of Gotham Central a little bit.
Yeah, well, it has that noir style. I mean, that's the artist doing the cover is the artist that did the book. So what you see in that with a lot of the thick areas of black and the way certain areas, you know, like the straps of the cargo netting, he just kind of left that area not black. So it gets colored in, and it becomes, you know, the netting. He didn't. He's working with the negative space and the positive space, and that's how all of his artwork always is. And I just absolutely love it. So I thought the story was great, and I love the artwork.
Mine will be Birthright number 2.
Nice.
It's all everything I said earlier in the show. Enjoyed the art. The story is engaging enough to, like I said, have me hopefully keep up with it as it comes out on a monthly schedule, so I can at least keep up mentioning on each show going forward.
All right.
Cool.
Mine is Rocket Raccoon number 5. Surprise, surprise. I'm enjoying this book. I absolutely regret not picking up the first, you know, 4 issues prior to this one, you know, in physical format, and I may have to start trying to track them down, but this issue definitely sold me in terms of Scotty Young's ability to both lay out the story, and, you know, in terms of visual storytelling, and, you know, tell a fun story. So I enjoyed this book immensely.
Is this safe for a 10-year-old?
10 years old, yes.
Because my son really wants to read it.
10 years old, I believe.
There's a couple of language. There's some language in a couple of the earlier issues I remember. I think I even mentioned that on a previous episode, like issues 1 or 2. There's like, because I was like, surprised they said that. Because even Scotty Young says it's not like an all ages book. Even though everyone's, you know, sees a talking raccoon and, oh, he's so fluffy and nice looking.
Right. That's why I was 10 is fifth grade, though. So you're starting to kind of mature, you know, in your reading in the fifth grade. So.
Yeah, well, he'll be starting fifth grade next year.
Okay.
But What was I going to say? Well, I noticed it was rated T for teen, but I didn't know. Sometimes that's because of the violence, just because he's holding a gun and he shoots it, so therefore it's no longer a kid look, you know, even though it's space lasers and, you know, whatever. But
okay. All right, well, maybe it's not for a 10-year-old who's still in the fourth grade. You know, it's kind of a weird line. I was about to say, it's kind of a weird line to draw. But, I would suggest you skim through it before you hand it over.
Well, then I guess that would leave me with Fiction Squad, number 2.
Nice.
The book has been enjoyable. So pick it up, people.
There you go.
Right there. Woo!
Yeah.
That is a nice cover.
Mm.
Oh, and of course, it reminds me, I meant to read Damon, and I didn't get around to it. I need to get to that, too.
What, Damon and Affleck? What? Matt Damon? What?
And isn't it an option for a movie or TV or something?
Yes, it has also.
Saw something about that today. The art looks nice. It was one of those series that I was like, it looks nice, but I know I won't have ever time to read it. Cool.
All right.
So that is tonight's episode of Comic Chronicles, number episode 94.
94, people!
Closing in on 100.
Yeah. Are we going to hit 100 before the end of the year? Are we going to take time off for like Thanksgiving? Probably.
Yes.
Hey, we have some year-end deliberations to do also. But
oh, man. Look at that. Yeah. We're getting up on episode 100, a year-end episode. Holy cow. We got to look at the calendar.
If we're lucky, by the time we do episode 100, we'll have any sort of information about the Comic Book Chronicles draft.
I knew that's where you were going.
That's funny.
It has not been forgotten.
It's not been forgotten. We'll just find out
who's ahead. Any sort of information.
We will find out who is ahead. That is funny. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, my God. Is it really going to fall like right around Christmas? Episode 100?
It can't be.
If we skip Thanksgiving, 1, 2.
I was going to say, last time we had to sneak one in to get to 50, so.
3.
Yeah, maybe it will then.
4, 5, 6. It'll be the week before.
Oh, cool. Maybe we should try to have some guests on for that.
Yes. We're gonna send out invites. We're gonna have like a big party.
But stay tuned for that.
Yeah, stay tuned, please. We got plans. Hey. We got plans in the works.
Indeed. Hey, before we go, let me mention this real quick. It's slightly related to comic books, but today is November, which is National Novel Writing Month. So if you are a writer, I mean, it's 6 days in, but you can catch up, whatever. Basically, you take the whole month, write a book during the whole day. I think 50,000 words is the pretty much the minimum hit. But you can go farther than that or as far as you plan on go. But you write a little bit every day, do a novel. You don't have to do any editing, and this is just a good writing practice. So, you know, any writers out there who are not already doing this or in kind of interested in do it, you go to NaNoWriMo.org, as you can see on the screen, or if you're on the audio, you go to NaNoWriMo.org, which is NaNoWriMo.org.
Cool.
So follow us on our individual Twitter accounts at TimDOGG98 and at TheClickNation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need.
Excellent.
That's an awesome picture.
So with that, we will be back next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Same Comic Book Chronicles time, same Comic Book Chronicles channel. And with that, we will say goodnight, Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.